Nice work, kids.
Dad!
Oh, thank goodness you're all right.
We caught the bad guys.
You let them fight? Do you realize what could have happened?
I would have been toast if it weren't for your kids. You should be proud. You taught them well. Go on. Be with your wife.
Pema!
Tenzin.
I'm here, Pema.
Our new son.
Hello. Come, meet your new brother.
A brother? Well, it's about time.
Welcome. I'm Iki, and this is Denora and Milo. We have a super great family, and we're so happy that you're a part of it.
What are you going to name him? Can I pick?
We already chose a name.
Rohan.
Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. I'm Sam Stanish. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. We are here today to discuss book one, chapter 10 of Legend of Korra, and what an episode it was. With me, as always, is my beautiful co-host who I met for the first time this past weekend. He is my dad's ex-girlfriend, Derek Grinding.
Yes, it is not a tragic day indeed, as our non-binary friend weirdly shouted in the episode.
They refused to name this person.
But yeah, we, the Bitter Jurors, have officially met in person after 10 years. It was okay.
Yeah, it was fine. May happen again. No rush.
We'll see. We'll see.
No, it was a lovely time. Chicago was an amazing place. Can't wait for Derek to come to New York.
Yeah.
Excellent. We also met the co-host of the Shadow Play Gays podcast, Christine, in the same night. So it was truly so many worlds coming together.
Absolutely. Worlds colliding. It's almost the anti-season 30 of Survivor.
Yeah. It was more like the Avatar joining the elements, or like maybe the real world. Someone was the bridge between the real world and the spirit world, and you know, id, ego, super ego, something like that. Nothing related to that. we have a wonderful guest. He has been on every piece of our coverage so far in the Bitter Jurors tenure. He joined us for Survivor. He was on several episodes of the Avatar podcast, and he also was on our short-lived Big Brother coverage. He is my hero, Brian Scally.
Oh, hello, hello. I'm so excited to be back. First of all, just to be on any episode of the Bitter Jurors podcast, phenomenal, no matter what we're talking about. But I'm also, I feel like, excited to talk about Korra. Came in as, you know, with my Avatar experience, really jumped on Avatar as it got dropped on Netflix, like a lot of other people. And quickly followed that up with Korra, so I'm excited to be in here.
Yeah, I feel like maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Korra went on Netflix like a month before Avatar, and like, but we didn't know that Avatar was going to be on Netflix, and people, like some people who were like rewatching Korra, like, or like, I don't know, it's obviously like the less talked about show of the two, and then like when Avatar hit Netflix, it was like that was the moment.
I think Korra went on after, didn't it?
You know, I'll believe you when you say that. Oh, I feel like it was on the No Longer With Us CBS All Access.
Yeah.
There was something that, there where the first two seasons were on CBS All Access.
Right. That makes more sense.
Very strange stuff.
Yeah.
Because I remember my initial, like, hearing about Korra, because I didn't even hear that much about Avatar when we were younger. Don't know how I avoided, but heard a lot about Cora and how great Cora was. It's like, I guess I was hearing about, you know, some later seasons potentially, but was like hearing all of the hype around it. And so it was always like, all right, well, I'm going to watch Avatar in order to watch the show that I keep hearing so many good things about in Cora. And then as soon as I really like Avatar, people are like, oh no, maybe Korra's okay, it's fine. And so I came into Legend of Korra season one with very low expectations after having previous high expectations dashed. And so I enjoyed season one enough, at least.
Look, that sounds like the best way to watch Legend of Korra, going in with low expectations, you know. As someone who went from 2008 to 2012 with limited Avatar content, you go in with such high expectations, and you know, those can be dashed quite quickly. But I'm glad I watched this episode twice today, and I'm glad I rewatched it, because I definitely enjoyed it a lot more the second time I watched it today. Maybe I was just like a little more focused. It was like I was taking more dutiful notes the second time, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. There's some issues that we'll get to, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, this is kind of turning the tides, shall we say, from last week's episode, which was a real stinker, as they say in the industry.
And we're not talking about Meatloaf.
Okay. Okay. Which are plentiful and also useful in this episode.
Yeah, no hate to the Air Kids. Never would hate on them. They are everything to me.
Not a utility I would have thought about for airbending, but I appreciate creativity.
Yeah, it's kind of genius.
I mean, it just makes sense. Like, Aang would blow bending out of his mouth all the time, so there's, you know, there is air that comes out the other end, and Milo is, you know, I think that Milo should have his tattoos already. He's come up with so many excellent new airbending moves.
Exactly. Or for all we know, this is just like a long standing tradition of the Air Nomads, and just like Aang was not about that life, you know.
Yeah, I feel like Master
Gyatso?
Aang's what'd you say? Yeah, Gyatso probably spearheaded this technique.
That sounds about correct. Especially since they're like vegetarians, like, let's be real. Yeah. But, you know, to get into the actual meat of the episode as opposed to the veggies, we start with who all is here? It's like Cora. No, it's like Cora and Mako, with Mako just dutifully at her bedside. Again, these kids, they're not very subtle about whatever the hell is going on here.
Mako's on his unforced error game. Like, he does not need to be holding her hand while she's asleep, while Asami looks on. Like, doesn't need to happen. Truly just, I feel, causing himself problems.
Yeah, the most like dutiful teenage boy that I've ever seen.
But how dare we? How else is he supposed to act? Like any other normal person and not be holding her hand or carrying her by himself? Like, how else was he supposed to act, guys? Like, come on, let's be real.
It's a good point. You know, now that you say it that way, I think that what he has been doing and is doing is completely justifiable.
Yeah, Mako is just like, that whole conversation with Asami over the dishes is just bad look for, I was gonna say our guy, but I don't claim any ownership of Mako.
I feel very bad for Asami in all of this. She does not like, she has done everything for this random group of people. I mean, Korra's not random, she's the Avatar, but for this random man, she has like spent $30,000 and like just like gone above and beyond, and he's like, you know, giving nothing to this relationship, and she just keeps getting hurt over and over again, and I, you know, I'm not happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mako's no Bolin for me. He's not my top choice, but I, you know, did not expect the teenage drama storyline to be coming in here, but I can mix it up. It's another genre of television I'll get into, so I wasn't upset about it peeking its head here.
That's a good point. Like, it is, I guess it's just on, I was not what I was expecting of the series to, like, focus in on high school relationship dynamics. And I think that that's a good point, and I should be more open to it, I guess. I just, like, wish that there was, like, I guess my issue with it is that there's not, like, a second relationship that I'm, like, rooting for. There's not, like, one that's, like, in the mix that's, like, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not why I'm showing up, for sure, but it's not, like, a plotline that I'm actively mad at, is more what I would say.
Yeah.
That's fair. And yeah, I was just gonna say, I'm not mad at the storyline, more so just mad at Mako for being, like, unlikable. I'm like, I'm not rooting for him to get with either of them. I'm not rooting for him to come out of this looking good. And he never does look good in any of these situations. Like, when Asami brings up the kiss, his reaction, first of all, is to get mad at Bolin for even talking about it. And then second of all, to not even be like, it meant nothing. He's just like, I'm confused. And it's weird. Never just says all the wrong things.
Yeah, I mean, he lies about it, and then he's mad. Like, it's just, like, not taking any ownership of his actions at all.
No, at all. And, to be fair, like, Korra initiated it. He didn't even go that route. Like, she kissed me. Like, and fully was just like, it's a weird time, Asami. Like, I don't know what you want me to do.
She held my hand while I was sitting next to her bed. It was her.
Yes. I heard her yell out to me for me to specifically carry her to, like, 10 feet over to, like, the vehicle, whatever they put her in.
I also feel like it's weird that they're not hitting the timeline of these events hard enough. Like, they just, like, will not. They spend so much time in the conversation between Korra and Tenzin going over information that the viewer already knows. Like, over the dinner table, it was like, we know, like, we get this, like, use this time for something else. But, like, in this plot line, no one is talking about the fact that, like, Korra and Mako kissed while Asami and Mako are in a relationship. Like, they are not, like, putting that in the text. It's just, like, implied. And it's like, that is the issue. It's not like Korra has feelings for, or Mako has feelings for Korra and he's, like, not acting on them, like, specifically. It's like, no, like, they have kissed and, like, it's a secret. And, like, that is the issue.
Right. It's just I don't know. No one is really reacting to it in, like, a way that is, like, feels true, but whatever. Meanwhile, there's, like, actual stakes going on in this episode.
Yeah, it was so cute. Or, like, I just think that all of the Tenzin's family stuff in this episode is really, really good. Like when he comes in the room in the morning and, like, they waited up for him and, like, they were super worried about him and he's just like, we found Korra, all that stuff is really, really good.
So cute. Love the matching pajamas from the Airbender family. It's perfect.
Would order a pair.
Absolutely. It's a lovely maroon. It's hard to go wrong with that. And they have a butt flap. Like, so useful. It's perfect. I love that scene with, like you said, every scene with the Airbender kids in this episode, like, they get their own little shining, like, fighting moment. I just love those kids. And I love that the show, like, when they had this new baby, Rohan, I love that they avoided, like, naming him, like, we'll name it Aang or, like, something, like, stupid, like, that would be significant, even though they kind of play it up as, like, significant with the music and the reactions and stuff. But I'm glad they avoided the trope that they themselves indulged in with the Hope baby from Avatar.
I mean,
one of my previous appearances.
Yes, we love
they could not. They could not do that twice in one episode for a character.
No.
The end reveal. But then we get these scenes of the council members getting attacked. I love the insight into the Fire Nation ladies' failing marriage. It seems terrible. Wish we got more of her. She seems really great, and I don't like her husband.
Yeah, I wish. What was? Go ahead.
I was gonna say would take an episode, like just a little spinoff.
Yes. Tales of Republic City.
Absolutely, her. We need to see the Earth Kingdom guy, the other Water Tribe dude, who I assume are in a loving relationship together. But yeah, this is very, very, very much shades of, speaking of like tales of Ba Sing Se, whatever, of the scene in the finale of book two when like all those generals are getting taken down. It's very that, but they just kind of like move past the other two, and like we can assume something is going down with the other guys. When the Fire Nation lady, let's be real, she's the most important of them, so who cares about the others?
They know they have a star and they're going to utilize her.
Absolutely.
There's also like just so much going on in this. I'm not mad that they, you know, told us that those people were done. It's like, I don't need to see that. I don't. It's a, I mean, I guess it's more of an issue that they haven't really set these people up as personalities I care about when they've been in a bunch of scenes and I'm just like, and they like haven't spoken. So I don't really care to see it.
Right. Exactly. They have cool designs though. They have that going for them.
That's, I feel like that's every character. You don't have to speak. You just, you have a very cool design.
Exactly. And I love that. Yeah. We see the mustache guy, I guess, without his like mask on. Terrifying Steve Buscemi-esque visage going on under that mask, apparently.
Oh, is he the guy who was at the door?
I'm pretty sure, right? That's like the... the implication, or am I
that makes
that
sense to me? But it's I'm sure you are familiar with that very old Tumblr post where someone posted the Joker without his makeup on in that scene in The Dark Knight, and then people, there was a lot of discourse about making people thinking it wasn't actually him, but somebody was saying it was him, and they were like, that's not okay, but that it actually was like a screenshot from the film. So I didn't recognize him, is what I'm trying to say.
This could have been solved with a peephole, because you look through, you're never answering the door for that face. Like, that's not happening. So, no. Councilwoman really has to step her game up a little bit there.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the apartment next to my boyfriend's apartment has a peephole, but it's just a hole. Like, there's not like a magnifying little lens. It's literally just a hole into their apartment.
Oh, hell no.
Oh.
That's how any number of terrible things can happen.
Yeah. Equalists are going to pump gas through there.
Literally.
That's exactly what I was just about to say.
The knockout gas is, it's coming in. Or they could very slowly just like fill the apartment with water and like drown them.
Wow. Or, you know, they could, you know, just put a couple carrots through there. Something not death related. Yeah.
I'm feeling like... What? The
apartment is sealed tight other than that one hole. That it would fill up with water.
Yeah.
You see, you get it. There, it's real danger.
All apartments are designed like the shape of water.
Very that, yes. Or like the house from Crawl, which gets filled with water so instantly, and also filled with alligators so instantly.
So we get to this attack on Tenzin, and there's a very quick moment right as they're attacking him where Tenzin's beard vibrates, and I thought, is he feeling them attacking, like some sort of echo sense in his pointy beard? Is that why it's pointed? Is it sort of like a divining rod for attack?
I mean, that sounds about right to me. Beard senses were going off, and not in the sense that he was sensing, you know, his relationship with Pema, because, you know, clearly Tenzin's a little fruity, let's be real.
Not since the Kung Fu episode of Dexter have I seen such utile beards.
So they shave their heads for airbending, but they also have pointy beards specifically for airbending.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything they do is in service of airbending.
I just want the rules down. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me, honestly. And like we did off pod, we established that also his ears are just voluptuous, gigantic ears. I assume those also serve a purpose of some sort we have not seen yet.
I mean, they have to do something. They are Dumbo-esque, and I have not realized until I was watching this episode and we got that beautiful side profile. They go like below his mouth and like above his eyebrows.
Yeah, that's king shit right there.
I know. It reminds, one time I went into work with a hickey on my ear.
Yeah, that is just like this.
This is what it reminded me of. I guess, yeah.
We get it. You have a boyfriend. We don't have to keep
okay, this was years ago. This was years ago. Obviously, I'm not going into whatever. I'm a 27-year-old man.
Getting hickeys on your ear?
No.
These hickeys are out of the past, is what you're saying.
They are remaining in the past.
Into the past. Got it. And then we get this, like we said, this non-binary delivery person slash assistant.
Aide to the council.
Yeah, just shows up to deliver some strange dialogue for no reason, but I appreciate their presence in the show.
I like the histrionics. Like, we needed somebody to really turn up the heat. I mean, Tenzin saying, I fear that Amon is approaching his endgame is not really, you know, that's more of a show. I mean, that's more of a tell than a show. And this person really delivers on the fear.
Absolutely.
They also tell Tenzin that, you know, he is fully in charge. Now that every other council member has been taken out, the final council member remaining is the only person in charge, and that is the legislative system that Aang and the gang divined, and that is how the system works in Republic City.
There you go. Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me, you know. It's... I love a system that incentivizes taking out everyone else in the system in order to attain power. I mean, it just makes sense. That's totally what Aang would want, I think.
Yeah, I think Tenzin is in league with Amon.
Yeah, just a very, you know, convoluted way of going about it, you know.
I thought this was no spoilers.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. I also do love that we get the chief of police that Tarlok paid off, I think, right? That's what we decided. And now he's a good guy, I guess.
I don't know. When did he... I can't remember the payoff.
I think Tarlok was, like, in league with this dude. The Psycon is his name, but now he's, like, cool with Tenzin. I don't know this dude's deal. He's just, like, a weird, shitty cop.
Yeah.
With a bad haircut.
I like how nobody decided to call in the United Forces until Tenzin got there in the peak of the crisis. Like, they've been dealing with a terrorist cell organization for months at this point. Like, it used to be Snowy and now it's not. Like, I feel like it's been like a year that they've been fighting him on, and no one is there to like deliver a message. What is the global issue that the forces are anywhere else? Like, what is going on in the world that they aren't even present?
And were they just going to wait until they could find a council person? Or how did they know that Tenzin was not captured earlier by this point? Like, maybe make the decision, guys.
Yeah, they're like, phew. Thankfully, this guy is here, or else we would just not. Maybe it's like he's the only one with, like, the number, like, the call-in, you know? Right. Which, again, very odd sort of system of power going on here. But, you know... maybe the global issue is that Dante Bosco is just not available until this point.
Because we needed this.
We needed Zuko's exact voice translated into a hunk of a man.
I'm down to have Dante Bosco as a character, but if it was gonna be a draw for fans, you would think they would want to put it in like episode one, moment one.
It's an interesting choice to be like, you guys recognize this guy's voice, and to name him Iroh, you know.
We could just do a similar voice, guys. It could have been just a slight variation. Not an exact replica.
It didn't have to be him at all. Like, this is a character who doesn't matter, who isn't in the show yet. It's a random throwaway, and it's just like, okay, like, I guess this guy's related to Zuko.
Presumably. We don't know that.
I can't remember. Oh, what? They're like, okay, so like we get this scene of Korra, Asami, Mako, and Bolin going off the island to go to the town hall or the police precinct. And they get to the car, and Korra's really bad at parking and like driving and stuff. And I just love it as another parallel to Buffy, who is famously a terrible driver.
Mm-hmm. I also love its real life parallels to me of like just like really playing onto my newfound fear of like just street parking in general, and just like the terror of coming upon just a mound of parking tickets. And unfortunately, unlike Mako, I would assume I can't just burn them up and they're gone.
Okay, yeah, he's like, the police have bigger fish to fry right now. But it's like, okay, but whoever put those tickets on the car like made a note of it and it's in a system somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I may or may not have assumed that, like, oh, they'll just forget about these with COVID, they're gone now. So like, maybe not.
it's probably a similar situation with the Equalist. There's like a sort of you know, we were all there, like, it's whatever, the Equalist problem. Kind of, we can, you know, give some amnesty for parking tickets, but yeah. I don't know, do they have what system? I assume it's also made of paper here, so Mako just needs to find those papers and burn those up and then he's scot-free.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I get it's a cool effect, but you would just, in the long-term thought, or maybe even just the second thought, is that someone else knows it's not only written on this ticket.
Exactly. What is that Mako boy thinking? He never makes the right decision. I can't.
But so Kusami will be fine paying the doubled fees.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be okay. Yeah, but we come upon what I would consider some of my favorite. I like, if we're still doing the whole like favorite Benny moments thing, like Tenzin just like rolls him out in this little sequence here where he's like using airbending to like save a bunch of people, and then he's like taking out some like mecha tanks, as they call them now, apparently. Just amazing stuff from our boy.
Yeah, well, my favorite moment is a moment we passed earlier when Tenzin is in combat with the guys who are trying to take him out. He does that big tornado thing, and he's like swinging the dudes around by their ropes. Very cool.
Yes, fantastic stuff from Tenzin here. And I feel like, yeah, these like last few episodes we've gotten some great Tenzin airbending, and like we said, from the airbender kids too, they, you know, they really show up and show out here.
The Tenzin fight against these mechs is cool, and I do like the bubble where he's like guiding the people out of the thing. But this is coming up on a critique of the show. I apologize out front, but this is just an issue I feel like. The concept of Legend of Korra is that it all takes place in this like New York-esque city, or Chicago-esque, whatever, based on, you know, hosts can differ either way. But then we get all of these scenes that are just like completely empty of like anybody except for like the six people involved in the conversation. Nobody is running around panicked in this like gigantic town square in the center of the city where there's like a gigantic fight happening. Like, where are the people who are running from the Equalists? Like, I felt like this was the same thing in all of the council scenes where there's just like this massive room with like billions of seats that like nobody is in. And like, it's just like, it seems like so empty, because there's the implication is that there should be a lot of people there.
Yeah, one, maybe I guess the non-benders were like, not my problem.
This is none of my business. I'm going back inside.
Not coming for me.
No, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we aren't seeing like benders running around like screaming like Amon's, like literally their biggest fear, presumably, like the revolution that we've been talking about is happening currently. Not a whole lot of panic. Maybe everyone, yeah, just like locked their door and hoped that their peephole is fully secured. And yeah.
Well, with the gas coming, I would want the peephole to be open.
That's true. Yeah.
Even the people he guided out, he guided like four people out of a massive building.
Yeah, they were very under. It was like a skeleton crew in there when he got there.
I guess everyone else was kidnapped.
Yeah, it's, you know, maybe it was a weekend. We don't know what's going on here. Everyone's just like out at the beach, enjoying their lives, whatever. It's okay.
Yeah. So Tenzin pops off the best that he can, but he does get defeated by the mecha tanks. An episode description or something could put mecha tank in quotes, and it made me laugh because I read it sarcastically. It's just like, this word, I felt like the person who was writing it was just like, whatever that means.
Yeah, it's like they're not really tank like. You could just call them robots, mechas, whatever. But whatever. It's Hiroshi's inventions. He can call them what he wants.
Certainly. And Team Avatar arrives in the nick of time.
Yeah. Just in time to destroy their amazing car. Like, goddamn.
Yeah, I feel like Asami is like that I think you should leave sketch, but in actuality, where she's like, I've got three of those. and so she's not worried about this one car. She's going to be able to drive another vintage car into another mecha tank very soon.
Mm-hmm. She's got doubles and triples.
Absolutely. And she's very rich and she has a wife.
Yeah, when is Bob Odenkirk? If we're bringing in random voices, like, come on, bring in Bob Odenkirk. Why not?
I think that he would make a great voice actor for a character we haven't met yet, so I will not say.
Okay. Spoiler section, we will be casting Bob Odenkirk.
Exactly.
We've been reading the show this whole time. We're going to be recasting.
I loved when Mako redirected lightning without having to deal with any of the narrative symbolism involved. He just did it, which was cool.
Yeah, that's king shit.
Yeah, you know, the things don't always have to be a big deal in the moment. You don't have time to stop down on them.
Yeah, for all we know, he went through all that off screen. You know, maybe he had to overcome the struggle of like being perpetually confused about everything, but especially women.
This is really weird, and that he like. Lightning.
it's real. Things are so confusing right now. I feel like that's Mako's like catchphrase at this point. He's just very confused. He's the Jada Essence Hall of the Legend of Korra. It's all about confusion for him.
And we skipped over earlier, but Lin had stayed with Tenzin's family to help them just stay safe in this dire situation facing Republic City. Love this. Love Lin and Tenzin's relationship throughout the season so far. I feel like Lin is the heart of this season. Like, you would think that like Bo Lin is, but I feel like he's like too comedic relief. Like, he really doesn't have his own arc or narrative at this point, and I really feel like Lin is like the emotional backbone of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is the third episode. I guess I'm the resident fight expert with like heavy action scenes that I've come on. But I will say, I think this episode did a really good job, especially in the Tenzin and Lin scenes, of like stopping down and giving us like emotional or character moments. So did appreciate that.
And I really appreciated Pema as well. Like, when Pema came outside and Tenzin and Lin were talking, like, it was such an interesting dynamic and tone shift that, like, I expected it to go one way. And I felt like when they were first starting the conversation, Pema was going to be, like, jealous, like Asami is of Mako and Korra. But it's, like, it's a much more nuanced, like, conversation where, like, she's, like, what are you two talking about? And like they go through that, but then Pema's like ultimately okay with it and very appreciative of Lin putting herself in the most danger, because like I feel like it's pretty easy to deduce that like Amon would be going after the Air family first. So like Pema is immediately okay with it, and Lin and Pema like have known each other for so long, so it's just like a very interesting dynamic to think about.
For sure, yeah. It's kind of like a healthier adult version of like the, like you said, like the Asami, Korra, Mako situation. And yeah, Lin is just like, I believe my only notes were like Lin slays. Like that, she's like on fire in this episode. I love her in this episode.
She's got the the emotional core, but she was also in exchange that was coming up where like she's like stay inside and remain calm. And Pema shrieks, and Lin says, "I just said to stay calm," even though like obviously as a viewer we're like, "Oh, she's going into labor." Very good.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Yeah, she's a great like straight woman. Even though she's definitely not straight in the other sense at all. And yeah, I just love, I'm sure there were like a million like Toph tearing up airships / Lin tearing up airships like parallel gifts on Tumblr back in the day.
True.
Very adorable. Like mother, like daughter.
They just can't leave an airship hanging.
Mm-mm, no. Mm-mm. When they see an airship, they floor it.
Does what has to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we love Lin, but then we get that like really, really like heart-wrenching scene of her getting her bending taken away, and like the presentation of that is so dramatic. It's raining and the music kind of like, it doesn't completely cut out, but it just goes like very quiet. And there's like just these like sad little mournful notes as like the action slows down. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, especially they've been building this bending, taking away threat throughout the season, both with Amon and then also Aang in the flashbacks previously, in the previous episode. And like to have her be the first character who we actually care about have their bending taken away, it's a really well done scene. I felt like it was built up super well throughout. Like we've known this as something that could happen, and then to have this it be her first is hard to bear.
Mm-hmm. And they do a really good job, especially when you consider like where Lin starts is like kind of the hard ass on Korra, and like maybe you're not a fan immediately. And at this point, where up until now, it's mostly been people that like we're not rooting for, and or like red shirts getting their bending taken away, and then Lin is that first person. It's like, oh, these are real consequences, and it's you know, not where you would have thought you felt about Lin early on.
For sure. Especially like, yeah, when you think about like the fact that it's Toph's daughter. So there's already like you have that level of sort of respect or love for her, regardless of like her personality. And then like to think like the daughter of the world's most powerful earthbender bending, or yeah, the world's most powerful earthbender, like getting her bending taken away, it's just like just hurts even more. We love you, Queen. Our hero, like Milo says. Yeah, I'm glad they do treat it like death, though. I mean, which brings up the weird sort of like idea of like, but I mean, it's like death of identity. So it's basically the same thing, but it's also, I don't know, kind of like it really accentuates the points of the point of the Equalists, which is like, what are you without bending, really? But whatever. It still is a really great dramatic moment, and I love it.
It is. 100. They, you know, I have a lot of critiques, but would never ever say anything bad about this or Lin in general. I just feel like this was done very well.
Mm-hmm. And I like that also, like that scene is super impactful while being a grand total of what, 12 seconds?
Like, probably not even.
Yeah, it's not long. They don't really like sit on it and like drag it out, but it gets the point across like immediately.
Does. Yeah. Great job. Music, like I said, always fantastic in the show.
But the reason for this scene, no, this is previously, but like I just felt like, not to invoke TV tropes, but there is some serious passing around of an idiot ball, I feel, with the Earthbenders and the metal bending cops. Like I just feel like there are simple solutions to their problems, and then they go in with this like tiny rock sometimes, and it's like, guys, you can just like lower the earth around your opponent 50 feet in an instant. Just like put them in a hole, like they nothing, they don't bother using one rope on one guy when you're fighting six people. Like, dude, just like a gigantic earth something. Like, come up with something else. You're limiting yourself by giving yourself these cables.
Yeah. Like, they really teched into, like, the Spider-Man stuff and then just, like, ignored the, like, earth stuff. But, you know, that's a good commentary on specialization in the workplace, you know.
Yeah, it looks great, but sometimes function over fashion, guys. Like, really need to think about it.
I don't know about that. You can't fight Equalists if you ain't cute.
Fashion is pain, and sometimes the pain is that you lose your magical super abilities. And it's worth it for the cool looks.
Every time. It's always worth the cool gray samurai armor plating. Always. But yeah, any other, I guess, thoughts on this episode, on Turning the Tides, before we dive into spoiler territory?
I have a couple that I can run through, unless Scally, you have something that you want to say.
No, I feel like we discussed the Lin moment at the end. There was like the quick moment of her looking back and saying like, don't turn back no matter what, which was like also super impactful, like equally as quick, but I thought really well done and delivered there.
Yeah, I thought that Iki's line, everything's not going to be fine, is it, Daddy, was like so heart-wrenching. Just like, it's like one of the most serious things said, and then saying daddy, just she's so young. And I feel like, especially after the, I felt like the airbending kids, like Tenzin's reaction to the airbending kids fighting was not given enough weight, I felt like, in the plot. So to have that line come up later was more helpful. Like, I felt like Tenzin maybe should have been a bit more, or their parents were child soldiers. And so, like, they should probably be a bit more sympathetic to the idea of these kids having to, like, fight off armed men.
Yeah, being child soldiers, two of them younger than Aang. I believe Jinora's 12, right, at this point? 11, 12.
Yeah, something like that.
Sad to think about. But, like we said, very cool action sequence from them, those kids.
I thought Tenzin and Korra had a good conversation. We've come back to Tenzin and Korra's relationship a lot over our coverage, and I felt like their goodbye, especially Tenzin telling Korra like she's learning well when she has to like go into hiding, even though Amon is gonna take away like 3,000 people's bendings in the next 3 days. you know, like he can do it so quickly, so like they can really just turn them through. But they had a good emotional moment there.
They did, yeah.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just start. It's like this. What was that from SpongeBob? The spanking line or whatever, but it's going to be bending removal.
Indeed. except Amon is the one crawling through people's legs. I like that Naga was able to kill the mustache guy. Like, he's dead.
Yeah, it's over for him. Yeah, just like horribly mauled by a bear and a dog at the same time. Just like it's over for him.
Midair. And finally, I just felt like being the Avatar means crawling through a lot more sewers than you would expect. Aang made his way through several sewers, or at least one sewer several times, and now here is Korra doing the same. Just if you gotta go into hiding or you need to sneak around, find the sewer.
Just absolutely not worth it. Not worth it to be the Avatar.
You see, this is why Ty Lee is your favorite character. She doesn't get into the slurry in the drill.
It's very true. She knows her limits.
My limits are not smelling bad. I get it. I totally, totally get it, honestly. On that amazing note, Scally, remind the people where to find you before they dip out for spoilers.
All right. Well, anything I'm doing will always be over on Twitter at Brian_Scally, which recently includes, we'll go with over on the Dom and Colin podcast, regularly talking about the challenge, which is about to come back with Matt Liguori, did a draft podcast with Allie and Brian over there. Also regularly covering Love Island on RHAP, the RHAP wrap-ups with Kirsten McInnes for Love Island US. That's been a lot of fun. And we'll be doing the Big Brother live feed update this Sunday for the season of Big Brother 23, also over on RHAP. Been a very fun season. So anything I'm doing, like I said, over on Twitter, but that's what I have coming up right now.
Does the underscore weigh on you? I was just looked at Brian Scally and just at Scally, and both of them have been inactive for over a decade, and neither of them have more than one tweet. It's just like, yeah, we gotta work on this.
If anyone wants to report at Scally on Twitter, please do. I do regularly.
Maybe
I'm
one
just
day
trying to get them taken down, but it has not happened yet.
I'm gonna do it right now. And I encourage all Bitter Judies to help out Scally remove the underscore from his name. They joined in November 2007 and have tweeted since.
It's
Let's get this guy off Twitter.
Calling all besties, kill. we're reporting as we speak. I'm sure. I feel like I'm. So we'd established. Are you like the? You're one of the chosen few who have been on all four Bitterger coverages, right? Like,
that's true. That's
on
true.
The Bitterger's wiki, which I assume definitely exists. You are ticking all four boxes.
An honor.
So I'm excited. I'm sure you will be back to talk Survivor sooner than we all think.
I can't wait.
I know. It's gonna be
I'm
weird.
Thrilled.
Me too. I'm ready for the mullet, the Jeff mullet. It's powerful, it's calling all our names, and I'm ready for it.
That makes one of us.
I really hope it's there.
That makes two of us, I believe. Thank you. If not all of us. We should all be excited for this hair journey for Jeff. Like, come on.
We shall see.
Okay. Well, you can find me at ReinDirix on Twitter, and you can find me on the Shadowplay Gaze over at Shadowplay Gaze on Twitter, where I'm talking about Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant, a 1997 anime with Christine Palin, a friend of the pod and IRL friend of the pod now.
You promoted that there is an interesting guest on this week, and I went on to our podcast account to see if I could get an early look at who it is, and it was not already on the website. So I wanted to know here who it is.
Oh, well, it's a friend of Christine's. Her name is Audrey Whiteside. She's in the band Speedy Ortiz, if you've heard of them, some other side projects, but very cool person to talk to. We, like I've said before, talked about like an hour and a half about this one episode of Utena. This one's for the gays, so everyone should be very thrilled for this episode that will already have been up by the time that this one comes out. So be excited for a thing you already listened to, please.
Got to get the cross promo going. I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter. I think that my other podcast, At Word on the Straits, STR8S on Instagram and Twitter, will be coming back shortly. My co-host has been on vocal rest for about 2 months now. And I think that I think he's going to go to the doctor soon, and we'll see what they say.
That's so exciting. Just in time for A Quiet Place Part 2, integration.
Yeah. John Krasinski knocked his neck into a wall, and that was his life hack in A Quiet Place.
Yeah, why wasn't everyone just chopping each other's throats in that universe? I don't get it.
That's my go-to. Now, if we're ever in A Quiet Place 2 situation, I'm ready to go. I can help anybody out.
Just a quick stomp on the neck and we're all good to go. Shall we talk about spoilers? I feel like the only thing that comes to mind in this episode or from this episode is the fact that the next episode, this Lynn sacrifice kind of just gets undone pretty quickly. Yeah.
Not next episode, is it?
Right. Well, no, I mean, are we like going to do
the last thing in the.
Right. Are we doing the last two episodes as one?
Oh, is it?
Aren't these the last two episodes? Am I wrong?
I mean, they are, but I didn't know. I thought that they were not a pair, but if they are,
I guess they're not really a pair. Like, this first one, Skeletons in the Closet, is like pure info dump. We can just do two separate episodes. I mean, we did for the pilot, and that aired together, so.
Oh, okay. I had no memory of that, so. But I would, yeah, let's do it as two separate ones. But yeah, I mean, they gave it some time, but I'm glad that Lynn does not, I guess I would have wanted her, like you're saying, to have lost her bending for a longer period of time, sort of explored that emotional arc a bit more.
I more so meant the fact that she did this for the airbenders and then they get captured like instantaneously.
Oh.
Also that.
A little of both. yeah, just the fact that like we get this huge emotional sacrifice from Lynn to keep the airbender safe, and then they get captured off screen. Not my favorite writing choice, but I mean, Korra restoring people's bending, it's whatever too. I mean, but it makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't know. I like real consequences in shows, so I don't have a problem with them like getting caught, even if it's quick. But it being off screen is the problem there for me, and then. Like you said, like the one person that we do care about, just like getting the bending back really fast is, not the best storytelling, in my opinion. It should be some consequence, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I guess since like it is them losing their bending to blood bending, like maybe something more interesting that could have happened. happen, especially if they're going to spend book two in the water tribes. Like, we could have had Korra like trying to figure out bloodbending or something, or like trying to find somebody who could teach her bloodbending so that she could try to figure out how to take someone, you know, something like that.
Oh, like literally just go to Katara and we get more Katara, like that.
Oh yeah, like thing. Katara knows how to do it.
Yeah, literally. Season two could use the storyline, so it would have been fine.
Yeah, it could use it. Jesus, way better than the Water Tribe storyline we get there with the fucking a giant civil war that gets treated with like the weight of like a small skirmish for like two episodes. Yeah,
it's not good.
No.
The other thing that this episode brings to mind is General Iroh, like General Iroh.
Brother.
Like, truly, they have done a lot of fan service in this season, but like, nothing is more glaring than this. Especially, like, his name is Iroh. He's voiced by Dante Bosco. Great. This character goes nowhere and has no, like, does almost nothing as far as I can remember. Like, he's cool in the finale of this season, and then I don't think he comes back. Like, I don't remember him at all, and he is nothing. And it's just sort of like, okay, then why? Like, why did we do this?
I mean, the only reason why I can think of is when General Iroh appeared, instantly everyone was shipping him with Bolin because we're like, we got to get another hot like guy in here to like ship with Bolin. So that's all I really remember of Iroh, really.
True. It was finally there was something else for people to think about.
Please like, draw him like, with anyone other than his brother, please.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, we could have gone the way of the Onceler fandom and done Bolin and Bolin. I'm sure that would have been something.
That sounds fine to me, honestly. I'm getting a shake of the head. No.
Well, I mean, I just like people were out of. I mean, I just feel ugh. Well, like Tumblr was so primed to be very into incest after like Supernatural and Game of Thrones. Like they were like, ugh. It was just it's a dark part of a dark time.
Fandom. Yeah. Yeah, dark time in our lives in general, just everyone's lives, I think. But, you know, yeah, no.
This led me down the path because I was like, well, in my mind, I was like, but nobody, like, I don't think of anybody ever shipping Sokka and Katara. And then I'm like, I don't want to even, like, go down the road. Like, I don't want to think about it.
I don't want to. And
I, you know, this is just reminding me of all of the fandom incest stuff that is not good.
No. Yeah, bitter jurors. Oh my... We are going to bravely come out against incest here.
Derek, I saw somebody subtweeting your NAR tweet today while I was looking around.
Subtweeting me?
Mm-hmm.
What was said?
You know,
we have to get into it here.
I won't quote it on the pod, but I was deep diving in on someone's page, and I saw someone tweet back in June about your tweet.
Okay, well, you gotta tell me this or send this to me instantaneously, please. I need to know. I'm the idea of anyone feeling negatively about me at all anywhere on the internet is just like too much for me to handle.
See, I'm fine with it if it does happen, but I do want to see it.
I want to know this person and convince them that actually they should be my best friend and love me unconditionally.
It would have been an incredible thing for me to snitch tag, but I did not for my own sake, left myself out of it. Anyway, thoughts, anybody? Me quote tweeting thoughts on episode 110 of Legend of Korra.
Literally. Yeah, Scally, any final spoilery thoughts about, I guess, even just like the end game of the season?
No, I think it was really good. I think it set up the finale well. But I think we've gone over, you know, pretty much anything like specific in terms of spoilers moving forward.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This will not be the last time we see you on Korra coverage, I'm sure. Coverage with a K. We'll get you in on some really banging episodes, I bet.
Can't wait.
But also, wow, we will need your energy on bad ones too. So I'm sorry. It's gonna
you know,
happen.
You go through the highs and lows of Korra, and that's fine. It is what it is. But no, thank you for having me back. Like I said, always fun to be here regardless of the topic. So was very excited. And I think this is a good episode. So I was glad to be here, especially for that.
It is.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. Nothing, no more thoughts, empty head as usual. And nothing else for me to say. At Sam Stanish, it's a good Twitter. That's it.
Yeah. Scally, wanna replug?
Everything is on Twitter at Brian_Scally. Hopefully soon changing if everyone can report as requested. But
yes.
Otherwise, yeah, everything I'm doing will be there tweeted out, including this.
Hell yeah. I cannot wait to see what lucky lady gets to be our Survivor 41. X has not been voted out this week or whatever. Always my favorite part of every season.
See, I've been already questioned if I'm doing it for Michelle on the challenge, but challenge Twitter is so bad. So we will see.
Interesting.
They need your stuff.
They do. Well, you can find me at ReinDierix. You can subtweet me there too, or just simply tweet at me if you so choose. And you can find me also at ShadowClayGaze on Twitter with my friend Christine.
Speaking of Michelle on the challenge, I was watching her promote some promo. They were like, they asked all the rookies whether they are fans of the challenge. And I was like, Michelle, I don't think I've ever seen you talk about the challenge before. But she gave a very, passionate answer. You know, obviously she loves the challenge. She is a big fan, has been watching it.
And the thing is, I feel like she's probably the biggest fan of anyone on the cast that's new. It's like, why would you put out this promo asking if they're fans when you know none of them are? Like, not one of them is.
That's like, okay, well, then this is reminding me, because, like, you know how, like, on shows like this, people, like, go in, they try to hide how big of a super fan they are, but they turn out to be, they are super fans, but, like, they're, like, pretending. I was thinking about people trying to do that in, like, amateur games or, like, fan live games where, like, people are, because I was seeing someone, I think Austin was tweeting about some game he went to, and I was like, do you think there are people who go to these, like, day-long events where they're like, no, I've never watched the show before?
Yes, I can tell you yes. that's Survivor Maryland weekend. Yes, there were.
That was like all former Survivor Maryland players.
They're like, I've never seen it. Never
Maybe not as much about the show, but as how close people were and who knew who. And yeah. A lot of that. Everyone's lying.
Everyone's lying constantly. Brian_Scally, you heard it first.
Absolutely. Gets the Bitterger's stamp of approval. Stamp. Yep. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Brian, again for being here. Bye, y'all.
Rate and review. Bye. Yep.